ॐ सहनापतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
In verse 44 of chapter 7.
Jnanatvayena nashtesmin Jnanatvayena nashtesmin Ajnane tat kritavratihi Ajnane tat kritavratihi Nabhati nasti chetyesha Nabhati nasti chetyesha Dvividapi vinashyati, dvividapi vinashyati. Jnana dvayena nashte asmin ajnane, that double nakara, asmin ajnane, tat krita, tat krita avratihi. Compound. Tat krita avritihi. Nabhati na asti cha iti esha dvividha api vinashyati.
Says I'm just going to repeat these seven factors so you all remember.
They're so hard to
remember. Ajnanam, ignorance. Avritti or avarana, the covering. Right? Vikshepa is the projection. Paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge. Aparoksha jnanam, direct knowledge. The shoka moksha, liberation from sorrow. And the triptihi, nirankusha triptihi, the limitless, the unabated fullness. These are the seven avastas that Vidyaranya is looking at for the jiva. The individual goes through these from ajnanam, ignorance, to moksha. These are the seven avastas, the seven stages. And so now in this, he's looking at the two knowledges, aparoksha, paroksha, and aparoksha. So he says, jnana dvayena, by these two, dvaya means this pair of knowledge, of knowledges. The paroksha jnanam and the aparoksha. By these two knowledges, by these two types of knowledge, the paroksha, the indirect knowledge, and the aparoksha, the direct immediate knowledge, by these two, he says, nashte asmin ajnane, absolute locative. When this ajnanam, which is the first of us, the first ajnanam, when this ajnanam, when this self-ignorance is destroyed, by these two avastas, right? By these two knowledges, paroksha and aparoksha knowledge, aparoksha jnana. When that is destroyed, when the ignorance is destroyed, tat krita avritihi, the covering, the avarana, the avriti, the covering that is brought, is caused by that ajnanam. Okay, the avarana, the covering that's caused by that ajnanam. So avriti, krita, tat, right? Tena, krita, avriti. So the covering that's caused by that, in what form? Nabhati na asti cha iti esha dvivida api. He says dvivida, the twofold the twofold avarana, the twofold avriti, which is caused by this paroksha and aparoksha jnanam, this twofold avriti, that also vinashyati, that also is destroyed. So what is the twofold avarana? So this is something Vidyaranya, it's kind of unique to him, how I haven't heard another Prakarana Granta do it this way, but it's very interesting. He looks at avarana, the covering, in two ways. First, there is no Brahman. There's no such thing. Na asti. Brahman is not there. Okay? The other one is, I've never experienced any such Brahman. First of all, there's no such thing. Second is, I've never experienced it. Right? So one is called na asti. Right? There is no Brahman. It is not. Na asti. It is not. Then nabhati. It's never appeared to me. Right? So, okay? So, by these two, the paroksha jnanam, the indirect knowledge, and the aparoksha jnanam, the direct knowledge, this avarana, this twofold avarana, that it is not and it's never been experienced by me, this twofold avarana is something that is completely eliminated, right? So, see if I want to do this. Okay, so that's what that verse says. Now he's going to develop this idea. Does everybody understand the idea? Paroksha jnanam gets rid of the part of the avarana, the indirect knowledge, the paroksha jnanam. I'll keep translating until I want these words to become very well known to you. The paroksha jnanam, the indirect knowledge, gets rid of the first half of the avarana, which is there is no such thing as Brahman, na asti, right? And I've used, the Shastra has used the example before, like for instance, you've never even heard about such a possibility as Brahman, a self which is limitless. You've never heard of such a thing, even know, even to have an avarana. It's like at night you walk along and there's a rope stin there that could be mistaken for a snake, but you've never even seen the rope to mistake it for a snake. So here, when there's just pure jnanam, you're just this upadhi, that's it. Nothing has occurred to you. But now, say you were to think about it. There is no such thing. What Brahman? There is no Brahman. And I've certainly never seen such a thing. That's avarana. There's no Brahman. I've never known of such a thing. I've never had any such experience of that. Then somebody comes along and says, well, you know, the Upanishads, they do speak of Brahman. And they say that Brahman is yourself, and that self is infinite. And this Upanishad, which so many people take to be an authority, an actual means of knowledge, the Upanishads do say such a thing, that such a Brahman is. And then you say, really? That's the paroksha jnanam has gotten rid of this ignorance that allows you to say there is no such thing. Now you say, I don't know it. But the Upanishads say there is such a thing. That's paroksha jnanam. Or I don't know it, but so-and-so says, right? Who is a reliable person. It's like in the 10th man story, when the old man comes up in the telling of that story, it's important, you know, if you tell the 10th man story, that when you have the old man coming up to talk to the 10th man, that he's not just some sort of a loser. You know, like a spaced out crazy man. The person who comes to talk to that 10th man has to be a person who has some authority, in the sense of he seems like a sane and together person who speaks with some authority and tells to that 10th man, don't worry, the 10th man is. Now this guy can say, good, the 10th man is. That's the paroksha jnanam. The aparoksha jnanam for the 10th man is when the 10th man is able to say, oh my God, I am the 10th man. When I'm able to say, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, that's aparoksha jnanam. So one, the first one, the na asti, it is not, Brahman is not, that is taken care of, right, by the paroksha jnanam. Aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, I am limitless, that is taken care of by the aparoksha jnanam. So this, because of these two aspects, Vidyaranya, the author, is looking at avarana as having, that being twofold, right? Because these two knowledges take care of one and then the other, okay? One takes care of one. So the paroksha takes care of the na-asti, it is not. The aparoksha, I am not. Okay, clear? So let's look at this next verse where he makes this more clear. Paroksha jnanato nashet. Paroksha jnanato nashet. Asatva vritti hetuta. Asatva vritti hetuta. Aparoksha jnana nashahi.
aparoksha jnana nashahi abhana vritti hetita abhana vritti hetita paroksha jnanataha nashet asatva avritti hetita aparoksha jnana nasha hi abhana avriti hetita. Okay. Paroksha jnana taha. There's that taha affix that gives the sense, goes on to a noun, gives the sense of the ablative case, the fifth case. So we see this quite a bit. So paroksha jnana taha, from the paroksha jnana, from the direct knowledge, right? Everybody see that? Paroksha jnana taha, from the direct knowledge, nashet asatva avriti hetuta. The hetuta, hetu means cause. Hetuta, that ta affix, it's like tvam or ta. Ta shows the abstract. That which is the cause of the asatva avriti. The asatva avriti, the asatva covering, is the isness. Sat means is. Sattva means isness. So asattva means it is not. Right? So that which is the hetu, the cause for the avriti, the covering of the is it in the sense of it is not. Right? Like if I say there is no Brahman, na asti. So that which causes the avriti, the covering of it is not, is nashet. That is destroyed. Nashet means it is destroyed. By what? Paroksha jnanam. So this is exactly just saying in the Sanskrit here what I've just told you. From the paroksha jnanam, the asatva, the not existing aspect of the avriti, nashet, that is destroyed. Then he says, aparoksha jnana nashya hi abhana avriti hetuta. He says, the not shining as I not being that, the not being here, not being experienced, the abhana, the not being experienced, right? That aspect of the avriti, of the covering, that is nashya. That is something which is destroyed by the aparoksha jnana. Right. So now he's given exactly what. So now look, you've got the ajnanam. The ajnanam causes the avarna. The avarna has two aspects. So we've got two. We've got avarna here. We've got ajnanam. Then we've got avarna. Then you've got the paroksha jnanam and the aparoksha jnanam. The paroksha and the aparoksha jnanam get rid of these two aspects of the avarna. Now, why is he going into all of this detail? It's because for you to gain liberation, truly, for you to become a liberated person, right, there is nothing at all that you can do because the nature of the self is already liberated. So for you to become a liberated person, the only way for you to accomplish that, because you come to the teacher seeking liberation, the only way you can accomplish that is to gain knowledge of yourself. That is it. If that were not it, the alternative would be that yourself, your being, is not liberated. If that's your nature, your being is not liberated. And that means who you are is, in fact, something that is subject to birth and death and duality. Right? So that's the alternative. And then there's nothing you can do about that either. So either you're liberated or you're not. And if you are liberated, then there's nothing you can do about that. Because you're already that. Like Swamiji says, please don't ask me to give you another head on your shoulders. Because it's already there. What can I do?
You know? So there's nothing to be done. There's nothing to be achieved here. That's why they say praptasya prapti. Knowledge is the attainment of the attained. The only way that you can attain the attained is to know it. If you're going to know it, then you have to know how you know it. What's involved in knowing it? All of the doubts in reference to your own swarupa, to your own being, have to be taken care of. But also you have to understand how you know it. How does knowledge take place? And what happens when that knowledge is not there? What happens when the knowledge is not there? What happens when the knowledge is there? What does that mean in terms of my experience in the world? What happens to me? Say you say the self is liberated. Well, I would like to see that the self is liberated. That's bonum. I have to know myself is liberated. What would that mean to know myself is liberated? What do we even mean by the word liberated? Every single word has to be unpacked and unfolded. And how knowledge itself takes place has to be unpacked and unfolded. You know, that's why also using these examples that we use over and over, like rope snake and the tenth man story. The tenth man story itself is considered to be one of the most powerful stories in terms of making a person understand how knowledge takes place, because so many, it's an exemplar for so many different situations in that, in the stages that a person goes through from knowledge to ignorance. So many things are replicated in that story. And so here Vidyaranya is really painstakingly going through all of these stages, which you can recognize. You can recognize them in yourself. Like if I bring, just as now we're unfolding this avarna, this covering in terms of Brahman is or it is not. Before there was a time when you didn't even know about Brahman. Right? Then you came to know, oh, there is such a thing as Brahman, so they say. I would like to recognize that. You see, there, it's just simply stating your experience. So then you come to the point, okay, there is this Brahman. Please teach me what this Brahman is. And then that student has to go through that teaching methodology so that the student can see that Brahman that you say is me. Right? The Brahman that the Upanishads talk about as being me, I see it. That is me. That I see it. I get it. That is the bonum. Okay? And so here now he's just broken it out that the paroksha jnanam goes to getting rid of the is, it is not, the aparoksha jnanam goes to getting rid of, if it is, I don't know it. Right? This goes from it is not to it is, but then it has to go from it is, but I don't know it, to it is, and I know it. See? So that's the paroksha and the aparoksha. So let's do the next verse. Abana varane nashte, abana varane nashte, jivatvaro pasanshaya, jivatvaro pasanshaya, karitritva jakila shokaha, karitritva jakila shokaha, samsarakyo nivaradate, samsarakyo nivaradate. Says, abhana. Avarane, abhana, avarane, nashte, jivatva, aropa, sanshayat, kartritva, adi, akilaha, shokaha, samsara, akyaha, nivartate. He says, abhana avarane neshte, absolute locative. When the covering, the avarna of abhana neshte is destroyed, abhana means the part that I don't know it. I know that it is, paroksha jnanam, but I don't know it. That's the abhana. When that non-shining is destroyed, when that avarana is removed, which means what? I do know it. I know. I see. I am that. That's the abhana. So when the abhana, when that covering of abhana, of not knowing, neshte, when that is destroyed, jivatva aropa sanshayat, because of the sanshaya, the complete destruction of the superimposition, aropa, of the jivatva, that being a jiva. Because now, if the abhana is, if that I don't know it, I am not that, I don't know that I'm that, if that's destroyed, then what does that mean? I do know that I'm that. If that knowledge is there, then what? Then because of the sanshaya, there's a complete destruction of the superimposition of jivatva, of being a jiva, of being a limited jiva on me. That is destroyed, because that is destroyed. What do they say? Kartritva, the doership adi. Adi means etc. Kartritva adi akilaha shokaha. Akilaha shokaha means all sorrow. Akila means all, everything. Akilaha shoka, all sorrow, beginning with kartritva. All the sorrow begins with kartritva. Kartritva means doership. Kartritva, bhoktritva. So the samsara, so all of the shoka, which begins, which has its roots, so akilaha shokaha, all of the sorrow, which has its beginnings in the kartritva, bhoktritva, doership, enjoyership, all of this, all of that sorrow, samsara akyaha, which we call samsara. Akya means call. Samsara akya, which we call samsara. So all of this samsara, beginning with all of the sorrow, which we call samsara, beginning with the kartritva and the bhoktritva, all of that nivartate, all of that disappears. All of that is gone. Right? So now we've got the dukkha moksha, the shoka moksha, the destruction of sorrow. Why is the destruction of the sorrow there? Because when the aparoksha jnanam is there, the jivatva is gone. What does it mean for the jivatva, that state of being a jiva, a limited being, what does it mean internally for it to be gone? If I have recognized the limitlessness of myself, what does it mean to recognize the limitlessness of myself? It means that the being that I am, the conscious me, when you say me, these words me, this conscious presence that you are, that is sitting right here, that you have always, always identified, this me, when you say I, you've always identified it to be the body, mind, sense organs, person. It's what we call karyakarana sangata. This body-mind complex, me, this person here that has sent this body, that has sense organs, that has a mind, that has feelings and emotions and a ahankara, I notion, this whole person here that has a birth and a death, a past, a family, and all of this, all of these experiences, that is me. And so when this goes, I go. So it's one thing. So there's a huge difference here. For the ajnani and the jnani are the same in one way. Because the jnani can say, I am this. I am this body. I am the sense organs. I am this mind. I am these emotions. I am these moods. I am these thoughts. I am all of this. But not all of this is me. I am this, but this is not me. I am this because this has no being without me. I am its truth. I am this. But when all of this goes, and with all the modifications that my mind is going through, the sense organs are going through, nothing happens to me. I am this, this is not me. The ajnani, I am this and this is me. That's what we mean by anyonya adhyasa. Swamiji uses this word all the time, anyonya adhyasa. Adhyasa means superimposition. Anyonya means mutual superimposition. Means, I am this body. and this body is me. If I say, I am this body becomes the existent conscious being. That's one half of the anyonya adyasa. Anya, anya, other, other. Right? So other, other, anyonya means mutual. Okay? So I say, I am this body. Then this, I am this mind-body complex. What happens? This mind-body complex then, and this half of the anyonya adyasa, becomes the conscious, existent being. But on the other half of it, the anyonya adyasa, I, the existent conscious being, become this body-mind-sense organs. And this body-mind-sense organs is subject to constant change in birth and death. Right? It's subject to moods. It's subject to happiness and sorrow. It's subject to sickness and old age and death. And it is limited. It lives in this one time and place. Right? With this limited amount of things. You know, Swamiji, that I kind of joked before, Swamiji once told me, said, you know, you have to be grateful for all that you have. Because all that you don't have is infinite. Right? It's so true. It's the truth. If you start thinking about what you don't have, there's no end. There is no end to it. And so this anyonya adyasa is profound. So the jnani has, I am this, but this is not me. The ajnani has, I am this, and this is me. That's the difference. For both, the me is the same. The self is the same. As it's aparokshitvam, it's svata siddha, it's self-evident nature as me is the same. But the jnani, for the jnani, this me is free. For the ajnani, this me is subject to whatever my body, mind, sense organs is going through. Because the viveka has not taken place, that's all. It's like the red hot iron ball. If you don't know fire, you don't know iron. And all you see, somebody for the first time holds up this round object that is burning and bright, then how do you, why would you think that it's not one entity? A round, heavy, hot, bright, brilliant entity. You don't know fire, you don't know iron. So here, from the standpoint of upadi, the body, mind, sense organs, how is this mind supposed to know? Wherever it, whatever it, whenever it is around, consciousness is there, existence is there. As long as this body is here, it exists. Why shouldn't it say? Why shouldn't the mind say, "I'm the existent one. I'm the conscious existent being," because consciousness existence is never away from it. It's only until somebody comes, the teaching comes along and points out that's true, and in fact, nothing is ever away from it. And in fact, the mind and the sense organs and the body that you are so identified with are actually objects that are coming and going with the awareness remaining steady. And the mind can be shocked. Oh my God. But it is a true recognition of a fact. And that's where it all starts. Then the teaching starts making that person see something that is right there to be seen. It's not a way. Myself is right here to be seen. It's the very being that I've always taken myself to be. Like in the tenth man story, the tenth man is not becoming a tenth man. He's not becoming the person. He is recognizing that the person that he is the person that he saw. I am recognizing that the person that I am is the person that I sought. The wholeness that I sought. The freedom that I sought, that I wanted to be, I recognize that I am and always have been. That is the aparokshitvam. And so here he says, when this jivatva, the state of being the jiva, means that the identification, the ahankara, is identified with the body, mind, sense organs, and so I am a conscious, limited being, this person here. When that jivatva is broken through knowledge, when it's destroyed through knowledge, then all of these other things go, the kartritva, all of the different causes for sorrow are gone because those things have no impact on my own nature. If I'm not that, if I recognize that I'm not these things, and I recognize what I am, that self that I am is not subject to any of these things. So let's go to the next verse, because it talks about the tripti, okay? Nivritti sarva samsare, nivritti sarva samsare, nityamukta prabhasanat, nityamukta prabhasanat, nirankusha pavet trittihi, nirankusha pavet trittihi, punashoka samudpavat, punashoka samudpavat. Nivritte sarva samsare nitya muktatva basanat nirankusha bhavet triptihi punaha shoka asamudbhavat. Another absolute locative. Nivritte sarva samsare. When all of the samsara, sarva, samsara, when all of that samsara is destroyed, how is it destroyed? From the aparoksha jnanam, which gets rid of the jivatva, that gets rid of the being a jiva, that gets rid of the doership in the bhoktatva, that gets rid of all of the sorrow that's born from that identification. So then, when this samsara is destroyed, nitya muktatva basanat, from knowing, bhasana means I know, I see, I am. It presents itself to me. Bhasana means it's shining as it is. What is shining, presenting itself as it is? Nitya muktatva. My being is timeless. Nitya mukta. It is liberated and it will never not be liberated and never has not been liberated. Nitya means free from time. This state of liberation that is me, this being that I am, which is changeless and free, is not subject to becoming, it's not subject to time. Nitya means free from time. You have to be careful with this word nitya, because when we think of, we don't think in terms in the world, we don't think of in terms of timeless, we think in terms of eternal. That eternal means going on forever. So yourself isn't going on forever, yourself is free from time. Which means that the being that you are right now, this presence, the presence is free from past and future. The presence of your being is free from time. Time belongs to duality. So this me, the me that you are, this me is ever fresh. When we say purana, the word we use, purana, the self is purana. It's ever new. It means this very me that is present right here and now, that is the very me that through the sense organs and mind, this image of the creation is here. If I were to go back within the creation a billion years, this me is illumining that. If I go a trillion years ahead, this very me that is here right now is the me in which that time period takes place. So time takes place within the creation, not within the self. The self is free from time. As I am right now, that is it. This me that I am now, this is me. It's not changing. It doesn't have a past. It doesn't have a future. It is the present. It's the presence of the present. In fact, experientially, just to be aware, to notice this, You've never experienced a past or future. You have no such experience. You can bring a memory from the past into the present. Like if I say, well, remember what you did a minute ago, or remember what you did yesterday. That's a memory that's now in the present. Right? Think of what you want to do tomorrow. That projection is in the present. You're never anything but the present. The present alone is, actually. But you, awareness, your being, the me, is the presence of the present. You bring the through memory, you bring the past into the present. Through projection, you bring the future into the present. And that present takes place in your presence. Okay? So your presence is the truth of time, really. You are the presence of the present. And the present is the truth of time. You're the presence of that present. That's the nitya. And that nature of yourself is mukta, is liberated. The nature of yourself is liberated, is ever free. Because nothing touches it. Awareness is not an object in the world to be touched. That's why you can't. You can't burn it, and you can't cut it, and you can't wet it, and you can't do anything to it. You can't tear it. There's nothing that you can do to consciousness, because the being that you are just illumines whatever is being done. Right? So nothing ever happens to you. So even if there is in the world, if there is sorrow and tragedy and joy and agitation, now everything that the world has to give, the good and the bad that takes place in the world, that takes place in your body, that takes place in your sense organs, that takes place in the mind, takes place in just in Maya itself. Whatever it has to give, good and bad, those experiences take place in the presence, the changeless presence of your being. Your being isn't harmed by them. Your being is their truth. But your being isn't harmed by them. And so no matter what the universe offers up or what your mind offers up, your being isn't harmed by it. And nor are these experiences of Maya or the experiences of your mind, which is good enough, the experiences of your mind, ever away from you. You're the constant presence that is always there, no matter what the mind is doing. I was hinting at this in the meditation today, because for the jnani, if you know this, the very ephemeral nature of your mind, like this, I can't just say to the chair, oh, become a couch. You know? Or, you're getting a little old. Can't you just renew yourself? But if I imagine a chair in my mind, I can do anything I want with it. I can immediately make it into a brand new chair. Or I can make it crumble also. Because the mind is ephemeral. I have control of the mind. And so now, say, your mind has for itself the changeless being which you are. And the mind, because of samsara, because of lifetimes after lifetimes of ignorance, you know, the mind habitually goes out into the world and gets in trouble. I need this, and I want this to be happy, and it should have been like this, and if only it could be like this, and everything would be okay. And the mind gets off onto a trip and gets itself all tangled up. But the mind is not like the chair. So you can say, okay, it's okay, come home. Yourself hasn't gone anywhere. There even comes a time, as you become more at home in your knowledge, that even as the mind's going out doing this and that, you're right there. Because you are right there anyway. It's just how much into the foreground has your own presence come in reference from the standpoint of your mind. It just, as you mature in your knowledge, it becomes more and more and more into the foreground. So the mind's doing this and that and the other thing. But the presence of yourself is so much in the foreground that it can't get lost by its concentration on this problem or that problem or this problem. But until that's the case, as your mind gets lost in its thoughts and in its worries, the mind starts to remember that, wait a minute, I'm still here, let me pull myself home. And it does, it talks to itself in a way, you know, it talks to itself in a way to unwind it and bring it home. To the home that hasn't, the home that is not, has no distance. Right? It's not like, you know, say if I go to the city and I want to get home, I have to drive, and it's raining. I have to drive all the way home. And that could be a harrowing journey. But here, if my mind's in a mess and causing me pain, there is no distance between the mind and myself. I just have to remind it and talk to it properly to release it from its stress, to release it from its pain, to release it from its pain, which is tension. So I just have to bring it home, not in terms of distance, but just in terms of remembrance. It's not really even remembrance isn't really the quite right word. Remembrance in the sense of unwinding it from its tension. You know, remembrance to unwind it from its tension. It's not remembrance of me. I'm right there. More and more, it recognizes that too. Even when it's in its tension, it recognizes, here I am, my being, Dhamma. Myself. I'm right in the middle of this tension. But then I don't want the tension there. So now I talk to the mind to release it from its tension. As long as that's necessary to take care of it, that's all. But as I become more and more at home with myself, this nitya muktatva, that my being as I am is free, with or without the tension of the mind. If the mind is tense, I have to talk to it nicely and help it to relax. I am the same. I am the same with the tense mind. I am the same with the relaxed mind. It means aproksha. My being, the me that's illumining the tense mind, is not tense. The me that is illumining the tense mind itself is nitya mukta. I recognize that because I know myself. And now, say as that becomes clear, then what? Nirankusha bhavet triptihi. Says, this tripti, this state of, tripti means, you know, satisfaction. That all is well with me, the tripti, is nirankusha. It becomes something that's not fettered. Because nothing can fetter it. Nothing can change it. And so that satisfaction becomes something which is limitless. Why? Shoka asamudbhavat. Punaha shoka asamudbhavat. Because the shoka, the sorrow, can never be born again. The sorrow can never come into being again. Because myself is never sorrowful. Now, as the mind recognizes, because the self is nitya, your being is constant, I can never be in sorrow. That fact, as the mind recognizes that fact, the mind itself starts to relax. So it also can't be in sorrow. Right? The mind starts to relax when, as it starts to recognize that the wholeness and the fullness that I need cannot be taken away from me. Then the mind itself starts to lose its capacity to be in sorrow because I can't be in sorrow. There can be a time when I'm not in sorrow, but the mind is in sorrow. I can say I'm not in sorrow because the one that I am is illumining the mind that is tense or happy. But there comes a time also when the mind has no need to be in sorrow because there's nothing to cause the sorrow. And for a long time, you're working out all of your complexes and this and that. Psychological complexes, trauma, childhood trauma, ways of behaving in the world or circumstances that have happened in the world that make you unhappy. Lack of vairagya. It takes a while for the vairagya, that dispassion, you know, to grow. All of these things grow in time, you know. But they're able to grow and mature. Why? Because the mind understands what the truth is. The mind understands that the source of the ananda that I seek is my own being. That the nature of my being is indestructible, immutable. It is whole and complete. Nothing can change that. The mind starts reveling in that. And as the mind relaxes, reveling in that, it enjoys a natural sukha. Your mind is naturally happy because the nature of the self is full and complete. When the mind is relaxed, that full and complete self reflects in the mind feels happy. Why is the mind ever tense? Really, why is the mind tense? Because I need this to be happy. I need this to be happy. I need this situation to be happy. I need things to be like this to be happy. That's all the unwinding it has to do. That's all unwinding. Because actually you don't need any of those things to be happy. You've never needed any of those things to be happy. If you did, you're screwed. Because those things don't have the happiness that you're seeking. That's why one thing can make you happy for 1 minute, and then the next minute you hate it. And the next minute, you're totally indifferent, and why did you ever want it in the first place? Now you need the garage sale. That's how everything is. It has nothing to do with happiness. What has to do with happiness is your own swarupa, your own being, and the mind, from the standpoint of the mind, it's relaxation. The only reason you've ever been happy is that you fulfill a desire, the mind relaxes. So you think, oh, that makes me so happy. It has nothing to do with your happiness. All that's had to do with your happiness is your mind is relaxed, doesn't want anything at that moment. And so you're just being yourself. You're being yourself. You're not wanting anything. All's well with me. That's it. So the fullness that you seek, does it deserve to be sought? Right? There is nothing out here that you need for your ananda. There's things for comfort and all of that. You know, I mean, I'm glad I have a roof over my head and all of that. That's true. So that's all practical stuff. But we're talking about wholeness, your well-being, how you are inside, who you are. And that person is totally free. Now that's, you know, in India, of course it's a tropical country, but the guru, this is some of the stories in the old days, the student would go to the teacher in the Rishikesh, in the Himalayas, and the teacher would say, fine, go come for knowledge. You walk down to Chennai, to Madras, and back with nothing.
Oh my God.
Don't take anything. Just walk down the back and then I'll teach you.
That's a long ways.
It's a long walk. It's a long walk. Yeah. It's a long walk. Yeah. To realize you don't need anything. It's an amazing thing to think about. Right? And that what you need is your own being. That's it. This is all, it's all Ishvara also. There's a lot in that. You think about it. Walk down to Chennai and back. Isn't it? Because This body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of Ishwara. That's when you really understand that vairagya. It's a good, big, good sadhana. You understand you don't need anything. You know? And then to recognize that you are the whole, that your being is the whole. Such a beautiful freedom. But now the thing is to understand, remember that, I mean, the whole Upanishad, it is to make you see yourself. It's aparoksha jnana. How to gain this aparoksha jnana? How to gain this direct, immediate knowledge? Because you already are that. Right? That's what the whole teaching methodology is about. It's so, so thorough. Approaching this way and that way and this way and that way. Because you as a jiva, within this infinite creation, looking around, have to recognize that I am the self of I am the whole. And for the mind to recognize I am the whole, to say I am the whole, not, oh, the Upanishad say that I am the whole. I am the whole. You know, that means that I have direct, immediate appreciation of that. And that means that I have to be able to see the truth of it from every single standpoint. It's not just I am pure awareness, you know, that myself is changeless. It's that this changeless self that I am is the self of this, is the truth of this. That I am the whole, that whole thing, I have to be able to see it from every angle to understand it so that my mind says, okay, all right, I see. It's your mind that has to be able to say, I see. You know, not the teacher's mind, the teacher sees. The student has to be able to say, all right, I do see that, to the point of my satisfaction. That's why the doubts and the questions, all of the doubts and questions are so, so very important. Because those doubts are the areas where your mind says, okay, I don't see that. In this area, from this little place here, I don't see that. Well, that's like a big boulder to your knowledge. That is exactly the thing that you have to see. Then you see then, oh, okay, and then there'll be a trickle-down effect, and that makes sense here, this little bit. But then I don't see that. And that's what needs to be seen, because it's all about its knowledge. There's nothing we can do about reality. Reality is what it is. But not seeing the reality, if I'm the whole and I don't see I'm the whole, then I'm limited. Okay, let's stop at this. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
I was just thinking what a great Christmas present that was. Beautiful.
Hi, Rain and Dave. I'm just reading your question. They write, what about the relational place? You mentioned a roof over your head. What is the role of the relational? I think the relational is you are part of a whole, and it's recognizing yourself as part of the whole. In other words, the relationship is not going to go away, nor should it go away, but I think you have a different understanding of it. You see yourself more as part of a whole rather than yourself just as a lone individual. In other words, let me put it this way. For instance, your prarabdha karma, you know, the karma that has caused you to take this birth. That prarabdha karma is a lot more than just your physical body and the situation, the physical body and who you are in a given situation. The whole situation is included in your prarabdha karma. Right? So you are part, so just even if you look at your experience in terms of the karma, you are part of a whole, and everybody is part of you and your situation. It's not just you alone in the situation. And so there's that relational aspect where you see things in kind of a, you see a bigger, you see your life as part of a bigger story, not just you alone. And also I think that's bringing Ishwara into it in a different way. You see yourself so much, the body, mind, sense organs, yourself as a jiva, as part and parcel of Ishwara. And so you have a greater sensitivity, I think, for your surroundings as being Ishwara. And also, another important thing is, if you know yourself, who you are, then you know who the other person is.
Yeah.
I know you deeply because you yourself is me. Right? The one that I'm looking at, I know who you are. I could not know who you are more intimately in terms of who you really are. The me that's inside is me. Right? The me that is inside, the me that is you, is the me that is me. And so that creates a different type of relationship because you truly do know who the person is. And you also know that when a person is upset or when you are upset, that's just a cloud passing through. And it will pass. Right? Say you're having a fit of some sort. In relationships. Somebody's having a conniption. They're having a fit. That's all it is. It's a fit. Or you're having a great time and then you're not having a great time. There's this, there's that. It's not just in close relationships. It's in the workplace. It's every place.
Well, Triji, hearts, guru, says yeah. All there is relationship.
All there is relationship. That's true, right? Within samsara, right? Within the world, there's relationship to absolutely everything.
Everything.
I like
how
that.
You relate.
Yeah. Who said that?
Mantriji.
Whose guru?
Heart
Defoe's. I'm saying so, don't
you?
Heart Defoe's guru. So he said, all there is relationship. Yeah. That's really beautiful. There's one self, and as long as within the Maya, all there is relationship.
Infinite relationship.
Infinite relationship, yeah. Yeah. It's true. How do you hold it?
Yeah. With grace.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, the way that knowledge is being used here is kind of like, it sounds like experience to me. Are they interchangeable? I mean, what's the word that's being used for knowledge?
Well, here we were using the paroksha and aparoksha. But this is the difference between self-knowledge and experiential knowledge that we gain through our sense perception. When we talk about experiential knowledge, we usually mean either this, either what I have direct immediate experience of through sense perception, that's experience, or I could talk about emotional states or meditative states. Those are experiences that are brought about by a condition of the mind. Okay, so that's when we talk about experience, these are experiences that are being generated through sense perception or by the meditative experiences or emotional experiences. Are we agreed on that? For experience. So when you're trying to generate an experience, you either have to have your sense organs line up with the object so that you can have that experience, or you have to do pranayama or something to have a meditative experience. So you're generating and creating the experience. And because you're generating or creating the experience comes into being and goes out of being. Similar, a meditative experience, if you bring your mind into a state of certain state, that state will last for so long and then it will pass. Just the same also with emotional states. So when we think of having direct knowledge, immediate experiential knowledge, that is true because the mind is taking on a condition which we illumine, and so we have the experience of that condition, whatever it be. But with self-knowledge, there's a difference. And the difference is this. The self-experience is already present because consciousness. So the conscious being that you are isn't dependent upon the mind to give it an experience of itself. It is the very self-evident experience that illumines the mind, right? And so consciousness is a timeless experience that is not dependent upon sense organs or even a mind because it's very nature. That's what we mean when we say it's self-evident. Okay. So now the problem is this self-evident experience that's not being given to me but is the very swarupa, the very nature of consciousness, the mind enjoys 100% all the time that the mind is there. So the mind has the experience, the self-evident experience is there as the very self of the mind, but the mind has ignorance. And so the mind says, this self-evident experience of me belongs to me, the mind. And there, that's where the anyonya adyasa, the mutual superimposition, takes place. So what has to happen is the mind has to gain knowledge. But the knowledge is really what we call ajnana nivritti. That's why we say it's the removal of ignorance rather than the positive gain of something. Because in all other types of knowledge, it's a positive gain. Your sense organs are creating a vritti, which then the mind knows if the thought changes, then that experience goes away. Here, the self experience is always here. The ignorance on the part of the mind causes the mind to take the self experience to belong to itself. And so now knowledge has to come in so that the mind recognizes, wait, I'm changing and blah, 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 I'm doing all of these things. The self experience, nothing ever happens to it. So it recognizes, maybe the self-experience is independent of me. It's talking, jabbering away, you know. And then it realizes that, myself is myself but is independent of me, this changing thoughts, right? And so that's the removal of ignorance. So the experience that was always there is now recognized differently by the mind. And so that's why when you say, well, it seems like an experience, it does seem like an experience because it's the recognition of an experience differently, right? And that's what makes it aparoksha. Because your sense organs aren't giving it to you. It's not indirect. Indirect means paroksha. Not indirect. Right? Because you're not seeing it through your sense organs. The mind isn't giving it to you. It's already there. It's already self-established. But it does really seem like an experience because you're recognizing the experience differently. But the experience is always there. Do you see the difference?
Yeah. So there are three types of knowledge that you brought up: the indirect, direct, and self.
Yeah.
You can make the distinction between the three.
That's right. So you have pratyaksha. So just to break the word down, pratyaksha means prati aksha. Pratyaksha. It means with aksha means the sense organs. So in the vicinity of the sense organs, so sense perception, pratyaksha. Para aksha, away from sense organs, indirect. Apara, so aparoksha, negates the indirectness, not away. Para aksha means away from the sense organs. Aparoksha, the para and the aksha becomes paroksha from paras. So anyway, so aparoksha means not away. So we have these three: pratyaksha, paroksha, and aparoksha. And self-knowledge is aparoksha, because the self is already its own experience. But it's never not been there, and it's timeless. That's why they say two words there's probably more words, but two basic words that we use in Sanskrit for it are swaprakasha, self-luminous, swaprakasha, and svatasiddha. Siddha means established. Svatasiddha, it's established in itself. It's self-evident. And if you think about it, now, in your own experience, just as a person, the me, this self, the conscious me that I am, that's always there. It's always a given. Everything is coming and going. All of your experiences are coming and going except for that one. Right? But that one is always identified with the body. Well, because I have that body, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The body's always here, so that must be it. And my mind is dependent on my body because of the brain and all this. It goes on and on and on like that. So we have to liberate that me from this mutual superimposition.
Thanks, that's very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's really, it's key.
Beautiful.
It's very key.
So, I can see that I illuminate the body-mind complex, right?
Uh-huh.
And it also includes all objects, right? And then I go like, but I am not that.
Well, you can say, I am that. Have try it like this. I think it works better. I am that. That is not me. In other words, why do I say that? Because there's no distance from my being. I am the being of all of this. Right, like I'm the being, I'm the very conscious being of my body, the conscious being of my mind, the conscious being of my sense organs, the conscious being of all my perceptions. So there's nothing away at all from this conscious being that I am. So I can say, I am that, I'm its truth. But that is not me. Like say if you say in reference to your mind, otherwise you've got consciousness over here and the mind over here. So what if you say, I am the thought, but the thought is not me?
Mm.
So now if I say if you see it like that, I am the thought is not me, then let the me come into the foreground, because after all, if I am the thought, so let the conscious being that I am totally, 100% come into the foreground. Be the very being. Just notice your me, the meanness, totally fill the thought, whatever it is. And then let that thought go on changing and see what happens to me, to the conscious being. Nothing. Nothing happens to it all. So I'm the being of the thought, but the thought is not me. Because if the thought was me, when the thought comes and goes and changes in form, I would change in form, but I don't. Nothing happens at all. So that's the beautiful satyam mithya, relationship to recognize that I'm indestructible. You can even do it when you're in there's a deep emotion taking place. You can let yourself just totally feel it, because you are totally feeling it anyway. You are the very self of that, but it's not hurting you at all. It's painful, like a painful thought is a painful thought. And it can have even affect your body, where your body feels the tension of a negative affect, you know, that'll hurt the body also. Make it tense and painful. But yourself is in and through that, and is not being touched by it at all. And that's a fact. So there's no reason not to appreciate it. Not to notice that. Because it's the truth. And it's there to be noticed. And the more that it is noticed in every given situation that your mind can throw up to you, the more relaxed the mind becomes. Because it itself realizes that, wow, even in this hellish condition, you know, I'm still there. The self is still there.
Right, it's also, but it could also be part of, when the mind goes, like, it gets into a stressful situation or a tense situation, but it still needs to kind of deal with itself the way it's been habitual dealing with itself.
Talk to itself nicely. I mean, if you learn how to do that, you mean. Or what do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, it's like, you know, it's not always that clear to me that, I mean, I do have those experiences to go like, oh, but the thoughts come and go, but I'm still here.
Yeah, but
I haven't changed.
But what about this? That's true. That's also kind of a talking to yourself, a meditative recognition. But you can also say, if you are in emotional pain, something's gone on and your mind has reacted, so now you're in emotional pain. Instead of, without even talking to yourself, which is another thing to do, I'm not dissing that in any way, that's a good exercise. But another thing you can do is just notice yourself present to that emotional pain. Because the fact is, even no matter how bad the emotional pain is, or how joyous another kind of state might be, the two extremes, yourself is there untouched, and it's there to be recognized. So you can even auto-suggest to yourself, so that your mind thinks of it when you're in the middle of emotional pain, because when you're in the middle of emotional pain, you don't always think of these things. You can say, you know, next time my mind, just as an experiment, next time my mind is hurting, just let me, and not try to get rid of the hurt for a moment at all, just be there. You just recognize your own presence in the middle of it. See what you are like, the me is like, in the middle of that painful situation. Just to see. Then you can bring in, you know, the different part of the mind to kind of talk to that painful situation and whatever it takes to kind of help move the mind out of that. But before any of that, you can just sit in the middle of it. Just recognize yourself. Because you're there. You're very much there. And that's also very healing for the mind. Because it'll say, oh, here I am in all this pain, and look. I'm still there. The self is still there. And it's still there as is. That's a huge revelation, actually. That you are still there as is.
Right, it has no movement whatsoever.
Mm.
That's how you know, right?
That's why, you know, I don't want you all to be in pain, but on the other hand, since pain is part of our life, you know, it's part of the sadhana, whatever pains you have, those are there. You might as well make use of them when they show up. You know.
Well,
as long
be.
As they're there, as long as they're there, they're a sadhana. And so how to be with that sadhana? how to make use of that sadhana. Let it be something where you help you to recognize that even in this situation, here I am. And then we have so many different ways of learning now how to talk to the mind in such a way as to, you know, help it when it's in that kind of pain. Let the buddhi that has knowledge help the mind that's in pain. But this is something else to recognize, that when the mind is in pain, I'm completely there, nothing has happened. And so if I can, there's even a second little stage you can do. If you recognize yourself, here you are, your mind's in pain, you recognize your own presence in the middle of that pain, and then you say, okay, let me just relax into myself. Just let relax into yourself. Just something to try.
Is there any danger of becoming sort of jaded to the nitya, in a sense? You do? I mean, maybe it could almost be sort of spiritual bypassing, but, you know, like if there's some suffering going on in your family, I mean, you could say, well, it's just nitya. You know, but that's not good, really.
No, but who would do that? I mean, at least with this teaching, that would not be. It would not be at all very sane, actually. You're not dealing with the problem as where the problem is. You know, say somebody's suffering, and you look at that suffering person and say, "It's all mitya. Don't worry." You didn't have anywhere.
Not to them, but like to yourself.
But even to yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you might say that to somebody else, but...
No, because you know what? You're going against human nature. You know?
Depends on the person's development, too, and understanding of the teaching. Mm. No. Doesn't?
Well, say if you said to a person, "Hey, don't worry, it's just mitya," and that was really an appropriate thing to say, that means that person was in a place where that was an appropriate thing to say. You know?
Maybe for yourself, maybe like in terms of your own like seeing things, maybe it's helpful to sometimes say, "No, it's mitya," and you know, then you don't take it quite so seriously. Your own self. I'm not talking to somebody else. Just when you're talking to yourself, when you're like thinking of some situation that's maybe difficult and you'd like it to be different, and but you can't.
Yeah, but you should be always thinking that way.
Yeah.
Maybe just say mitya is, what if you said it's all Ishwara?
Yeah.
And then you have you understand it in terms of Ishwara, and it puts a different spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your knowledge does put a different spin, right, on your experience. You understand your experience in a different way, but I don't think at all that it makes you less caring or less compassionate, because compassion, and I've heard Swamiji talk about this also, I just think it's so true. Compassion is a human quality. Human beings are loving and compassionate unless they're hurt. When there's something wrong going on, you know, some kind of a problem inside, then that isn't showing up. But if you're just your natural self, a person is naturally loving and compassionate because it's the nature of the self. Things have to get in the way as obstructions to take that away from you. That's why if you think of a wise man, or wise woman, a wise person, you know, usually think of somebody who's kind, you know, somebody who cares, who has all of these values that we emulate or that we look up to, these kind of values.
And somebody like Swamiji who has all those qualities, but he doesn't get overwhelmed by any, you know what I mean? I mean, like,
and that's because... Yeah. Of knowledge.
Right.
But all the qualities are there.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So the understanding Ishvara, the understanding I am the whole, the mithyatva, that is all there, but none of it in any way, and so it keeps a person objective, but in no way stops you from being kind or caring. That's what is natural to you. So a wise person is a kind person because it's not a problem. So you're that way unless there's a problem.
Right, doesn't it take a certain maturity though to be in the middle of pain and at the same time know that you are not that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
there's two things.
Sounds good, but that's not my experience most of the time, you know?
Well, when you're, I would say like this, or when you're in pain, what's the cause of the pain? You know, so if the cause of the pain is if the something's not going the way that you want.
Usually, yeah.
Okay, that's usually what it is. So in that area, there's a lack of vairagya. Okay, so I need this to be happy. So of course I'm in pain because I've superimposed my happiness on that and I don't have it. Something's going wrong. So I need it to be that way. It's not being that way. Therefore, I'm in pain. So now you have to unwind that whole problem. It has to be unwound because it's ajnanam, right? And so then you have to talk to your mind. I should see, because you'll get to a place where I would like it to be that way, it's not that way, okay. I would like it to be that way, I'll try to make it that way. If it's not that way, it's fine.
And why is that? Why is it fine? Because you rest in yourself?
That's why. Because I'm not asking it to be that way so that I can be happy. Doesn't mean you don't have preferences. Right? Just through your karma, you're going to have preferences, but that doesn't mean that your ananda is superimposed on it having to be that way. You'll make it that way. You know, you'd like to help in this way or do that, or you'd like to have this thing, but if you don't get it, that's fine. You work for it. If you don't get it, it's fine. This projection's not there. So the projection, those projections become less and less and less and less as time, as you work through things. And as they become less and less, then you're more objective in terms of the situations that get thrown your way or that you find yourself in.
So you can smell it after a while when it comes up. Oh, here we go again. Right? It's the same
kind
of quality.
Yeah, you can recognize the pattern. And then once you recognize the pattern, that's the beginning of the end. Once the pattern, right, for that particular pattern, once you see it, right, then you're conscious of it. And then then it's on its way out.
Yeah. And then there's that last part where, I'm not going to let that go, though, because, like, you know, I know that, you know? I'm not going to let that go.
And then at some point you'll say, well, I guess I will let it go.
Right.
Because it's not worth it.
Yeah.
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 Eventually you let
that
it go.
That to me is like being it, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, trying to get to that. And so I think the mind still, my mind still needs to go like, I know what it is, and I know, you know, I can let it go, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe I should hang on one more time to really get it. Like that.
Yeah.
You know? And I can go like, well, that's stupid, you know better, da 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 da. Or people will tell you, you know, like, well, you know better, you know who you are, you know. I don't know, you do what you do until you don't, I guess.
Yeah. You know, and also, another interesting thing about that is psychologically, internally, the wounded child inside, if I can use that language, and the little child parts inside, they need some attention, and they're not old enough to gain knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
So they don't want to be left out.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, you don't go, don't do that. Don't, you know, you take care of me first. So you just have to say, don't worry, I'm not going to leave you. You will always be with me. I will always look after you. I will always take care of you, and you will grow up and be just fine. So that those parts don't become afraid, because there's psychological parts inside that need the assurance.
It's a trust, yeah.
A trust. They need the assurance that you will look after them until they really integrate back into your adult ego. And they don't want anybody coming along and giving them knowledge or giving you knowledge, so you think that they're not... don't need the attention, and they do need the attention. The psyche needs to be handled, you know, with love and patience.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.